realize it, what do? We often sort of pull back and we're like, well, let's see if they'll do it. And you know, we want them to put out some effort because we feel slighted to some degree that we have to put all the effort out, and they don't put the effort out. And so, and very often, and I remember actually happened in a church years and years ago. I was a pretty new Christian, and I remember one of the members there at the time had kind of discovered that about a lot of her relationships in the church. And so she had kind of done an experiment for like a month or whatever. She wasn't going to contact anybody and see who contacted her. And very few people contacted her. And but she was worse off for not having contacted people. She wasn't, her life wasn't improved. She became a little bitter and upset. And reality is, sometimes we do put out the effort and people don't respond. In fact, anybody here sent out some kind of invitation where people needed to RSVP? Now, I don't know if it's just our group is really terrible at sending RSVPs or if that's kind of a real normal thing in a lot of places. But our group is really bad about responding to RSVPs. We just have to kind of own that. Yeah, people will go like, hey, we're going to do this thing, just send out an RSVP. And, you know, sometimes I think we believe RSVP means I only respond if I'm going. But that's not actually what it means. It means to tell me if you're coming or not coming so I can know how many other people are going to be here. And I can plan. And then sometimes, you know, people, they want an RSVP maybe a week ahead of time, and people are, you know, day before, night before. Oh, I'll be there. Okay. Didn't know you were coming, but okay, I'll try and scramble to get you involved. Now, I bring all that up because it really is easy to sort of give up when we're doing these good things and we're not getting the responses that we hope for and that we wish for. I've had those relationships. I've had some good friends all back in high school that were like that, that we did a bunch of stuff, enjoyed my time with them, have been dear friends for all of my life, really. But most of the things we did, I planned, and I called them. And eventually I realized that, and I kind of did that exact same thing. I'm going to pull back, see if he does anything, and he didn't. It's like, well, then I just kept doing it. You're like, well, that's kind of the dynamic of our relationship. I'm the one that plans stuff. I'm the one that... That happens in couples, right? You get a married couple, and oftentimes one of them is the one that plans everything. If you sat back and waited for the other to plan everything, what would happen? Nothing? So quit looking at each other, spouses. Whole bunch of eyes started looking at each other there. These are normal dynamics. And I bring them all up to kind of understand this particular point, to don't stop doing those good things to everyone just because others aren't responding the way we would like. And so one of the things that this passage tells us in Galatians 6, we're going to look at these couple of verses, that we will receive in time. He says, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. We will receive. Because what? Why do we stop? Because at some point in some kind of relationship where we feel it's one-sided and we're putting out all the effort and they're not putting out the effort, we feel like we're kind of being used. That we feel like we're the ones sacrificed, they're not doing anything. And once that attitude kind of sets in, it's a little kind of caustic and it kind of ruins often relationships. But very often we kind of like, we give up doing the stuff because we feel like we're not getting something, we're not getting back what we want. And so one of the things he's urging us as Christians is very often as Christians, we're going to be the person doing good to people. Hopefully that's the case. That we're going to be the ones putting out the effort for others. And they're not going to reciprocate. They're not going to do likewise. They're not going to, you know, give us the same benefit of the doubt that we might be trying to give them. And it comes out in all kinds of ways. But think about this passage and why Paul even wrote it to the Christians. Why would he tell them, you know, don't grow weary of doing good, unless that was a normal temptation? You're doing good and you're getting tired. And a lot of times we're getting tired because we're not reaping. We're not feeling the good effects of it. We feel like we're still having to put out all the effort. And the effort's harder and harder sometimes. Unless we feel like, you know, we get some kind of rejoicing from it. We get some kind of uplift from it. And if it feels like it's always effort for us and we're never getting uplifted from it, it's very easy to grow tired of doing good. And he's urging us, don't do that. That is a common thing. Happens to all of us at one time or another. It's going to happen to us if we are really living as Christians and we are doing good to everybody. Don't give up. Don't stop. He says, so then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are the household of faith. You know, this idea of the household of faith is this concept of your family. The family that we have in faith, especially for them. But the idea is we do good to everybody, and don't stop doing good to everybody. And when he says, especially the household of faith, he's not saying, well, I'm going to do more for them. The people out there that are not part of my household of faith are not as important to do good to. That's not really what he's saying, I don't think. I think what he's trying to get us to say is a little bit like the idea that love and caring, it starts at home. It starts with the ones we spend all of our time with. Because very often the ones at home, they get our worst. We kind of put a good face on and we do our best to try and tamp down all of our irritations to out in the world. And then we come home and, you know, we kick the dog, you know, the old story. And we yell at each other and we take it out on each other. And he's saying, look, the people we're close to, we need to especially do that for. We have to have that mindset that we have to do good for those around us. Especially the people that are around us all the time. And then as other people come into our sphere that we don't see or connect with much, or maybe just a one-time thing, we need to try and do good. That's our calling in some respects as Christians, to practice God's goodness in this world. Now, in Romans chapter 2, Paul actually wrote all again to the church in Rome. He talked about this idea that everyone will reap according to what we have done. He says, and start in verse 6, he will render to each one according to his works. To render means to pay back. And so he's saying, whatever you've done, God will do for you. But very often, how long does it take for God to pay us back? In some respects, it's not till heaven. Some of the payback isn't going to happen on this earth. Some of it will. I mean, you know, he gives us times of refreshings. He gives us other, you know, instances of things. But a lot of the payback is eternity. It's the wiping away of all tears. And so he is telling us, you know, to those who by patience and well-doing, they seek for glory and honor and immortality, he will give eternal life. Notice what he just said. To those who by patience in well-doing, in doing good works, in doing good to people, he will reward you with eternal life. That's just what I just said, right? That's not going to happen until this body dies. That could be a long time for some of us. And even for some of us, maybe it's only, you know, 15, 20 years. That's a fairly long time still, isn't it, to wait. Let's say it was only going to be a year till you reaped. How hard is it for you to wait, to do something and wait for the return for a year? We often want immediate results. I remember my dad planted a, he loved avocados. And he, you know, growing up in California, and he grew up out in the Valley of California, they grow a lot of avocados there. So every house, I had two houses growing up with my parents, and planted avocado trees in both of them. First one, you know, I was real little. I don't know how long it took, but yeah. The second one, house we moved into, planted an avocado tree in the backyard. It took 7 years to get one edible avocado. And that first year, it only produced one. It started producing great avocados in the eighth year. But, in that seven-year time frame, he was almost ready to cut it down and get rid of it. Because it didn't do, and it didn't produce when he expected it to produce. And a lot of us, we want that. We want a return. We expect a return. We expect some good thing to come from what we do. But very often it doesn't come as quickly as we would like. And God is telling us, to some degree, he knows that. And he's urging us to be patient. To remember, because this is where trust and faith really come in. We have to trust God. That even if I don't receive until eternity, eternity will still be worth it. We have to trust. That's what he's asking of us. And so, the other point to make on this same topic, though, is good deeds are never meaningless. Even if you don't feel like you're getting some kind of return from them. In 1 Corinthians 15 and 58, you know, Paul had written to that church, he said, "Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that the Lord, that in the Lord your labor is not in vain." Which vain means essentially empty. And he says, the work that we do, the labor that we do, the good that we do for the Lord is never empty. Even if we don't get from others what we wish we could. Doing it itself, us doing it, actually helps us. And it glorifies God. And so it is very easy, and I am certainly guilty of it. We have not had a consistent men's breakfast here in this group until Dave and Rich decided they're going to do them, split them between their houses, and they will hold them every month, regardless of who shows up. I don't know, Dave probably remembers, going all the way back to 02, and I have tried to start men's breakfast every month probably 5 or 6 times. And it just, it might just be a month or two go by, nobody shows, and what do? And I give up. Like, apparently nobody wants to come. Now, people would come and enjoy them, but I was doing all the effort to create them. And I got, I fell into this exact trap I'm talking about. I would stop doing them. And then, the year would go by, and I'd try to do them again. And if I didn't get the feedback, and you'd have a good one or two, and then, then fall away. And then, so I'd give up again. And it happens all the time. Now, one of the reasons why I think one of the reasons Jesus sent them out 2 by 2 is to help them in that respect. Because very often, if we try to do things with another person, we can encourage each other in that doing of good. And by ourselves, we're much more likely to give up than if we just have another helper in whatever thing we're trying to do. It might be just teaching other people the gospel. Doing that with others is very helpful. So just remembering that fact, I think, is really important. Touch something? Okay, there we go. What if Jesus actually stopped because people didn't respond as he hoped? So you probably never thought about that, right? Did people respond as Jesus would have desired or hoped for? Sometimes yes, but a lot of times no. And I'm not going to turn to all these passages. Well, we do have a little extra time. But in John 6 there, this is right after, in John 6 and 60, 69, it's right after Jesus had fed 5,000, he had walked on the water, and he had all of those people he had fed or a lot of the big multitudes of them, thousands of people, they kind of found him as he had walked on the water and he had gone to the other side of the lake. And they came to him, and then he spoke some truths to them that they responded with, those are hard things, and I don't know that I can handle that. And they all left. And it tells us in this passage, the beginning here in 60, that they, the disciples that had been traveling with him, all left him. And he actually turned to his own apostles, and he said to them, do you want to leave too? Now, I think they kind of answered no, but the answer that Peter, it's recorded Peter giving is, well, where else could we go? as if they'd even contemplated, there's another option. Is there another option? I don't think he was saying that, but it kind of reads that way when you read it in English. But he's like, who else has the words of life? There's nobody else to go to. But I think even his own apostles were acknowledging that the things he said were hard. They were difficult. He had challenged them with something that made the people go, ooh, I don't know if I want to walk with you. I don't know if I want to follow you. And Jesus himself is kind of like looking at his own going, you guys want to go with me? Do you remember how, I didn't even put this is another example, but if you remember the story of him the night before he was arrested, when he went out to the garden, he was going to pray, right? He knew Judas had gone and kind of turned him in and was leading the troops to come arrest him in the garden. And he went out to the garden and he prayed and he was very upset. And he asked, you know, Peter, James, and John to go with him. And he asked him to watch with him. And they kept falling asleep. And he kept coming back. And he says, you can't watch with me 1 hour. Do you think he was disappointed in them not staying awake with him? If you were really upset and you asked somebody to sit with you for a little while and they just fell asleep, laid their head down, would it bother you? If you were about, you know, to be arrested and killed in a fairly short period of time, and he's told them that, by the way. It's not like he didn't tell them that. They didn't get it, but it isn't like he hadn't alerted them to that. And you can see actually in the Gospels, there were times that what Jesus says to them seems like he's a little frustrated with their lack of understanding. I think it makes sense. I mean, their lack of understanding oftentimes would be frustrating for any human being. But he kept doing good, right? And so, John 14, that's the passage right before that where he says, you know, he was telling them before going out to the garden that, you know, he's going to die and he's going away and he's not, and I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And they're like, and Philip is kind of like, you know, and he's, I'm going to go to the Father. And he's like, oh, show us the Father. And Jesus, he says to him, have I been with you so long, Philip? And you still don't know me? You have seen the Father because you saw me, he tells Philip. The Father and I are one. And Philip didn't know that. So Jesus is about to end 3 years with them. And Philip doesn't know this. And you can kind of, to me anyway, I read it and I feel like, it seems like Jesus is a little frustrated with them. I think he wishes they got it a little bit better. But he didn't stop, did he? No matter who. Because now, when he was finally arrested, how many did he have around him? They were there, and then they all ran. And so he went to the cross alone. He still had to face that. So he was going to do what God wanted him to do and what he was called to do, regardless of how the others around him acted. It would have been better if the others were supportive and helpful and encouraging him, and he didn't have to call them Satan and get behind me like Peter. But he was going to do what God asked him to do regardless. And that's the thing that all of us have to learn. And that's why we're going to kind of end with this passage. In Hebrews chapter 12, because he essentially is telling us this same idea that he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Now, and who he's referring to there is all the people that are mentioned in chapter 11. And for many of you, I don't know if everybody is aware, the word witnesses here is the term that was used in by English speakers in modern times as martyr. The people they mentioned in chapter 11, almost all died because of their faith, or suffered because of their faith. And he says, listen, we're surrounded by all of these witnesses, all of these people who have gone before us, who have given their lives as a testimony to their faith in God. And he says, since this is happening and all of them are around us and we see all of them, we need to lay aside every weight, all the things that keep us from doing good and walking as a Christian. We need to lay aside the sin which clings so closely to us. And we need to run with endurance the race that is set before us. This endurance has that same idea as patience, right? We see people who are running marathons. And I think that's the imagery here. I mean, at the time of the writing of this, the Greek marathon was already in existence. The Greek Olympics were already in existence. And that concept of running long distances was something they were familiar with, and running long distances to win a race. And in fact, they won these laurel wreath crowns. That imagery is used in Scripture quite a bit. And so he's telling us, listen, there's all these people who have done it before us. We can do it too. We need to set aside the things that are slowing us down and getting in our way of being Christians and doing good. We need to get rid of the sin that we keep practicing and doing that clings to us and hurts us and damages us and keeps us from running. And then we need to be patient and have endurance as we run this race, looking to Jesus, because he's the example of it, what we're talking about. Everything God asks us to do, in some way, Jesus is the example of. He's the ultimate example of everything as God asks us to walk in. And so he says, he is the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And so he had all of these things that made it difficult for him to run the race as well. That's why he said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. When Peter was telling him, Jesus had said to his apostles that, he had to die. And Peter's like, no, never, Lord, we won't let that happen. And he's like, get behind me, Satan. I don't need you to tell me not to die. He probably already had enough fear of dying already. I don't need you kind of encouraging that. I need you to kind of help me. It's like, you can do this. And so he had enough obstacles that he had to overcome. But he did it. He was able to overcome them all because he was looking toward the finish. He was looking towards that eternity. And so he sat down, seated at the right hand throne of God. And then verse 3, and this is the part this is our what we'll end with. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted, so that you don't give up. And a lot of us don't have sinners have incredible hostility towards us like they did to him, right? I don't have people seeking to kill me, at least none that I'm aware of, like he did. The hostility aimed at him was immense. Most of us don't have that same level of hostility. Now, we still have issues. We still have weights. We still have trials and obstacles and sin. And all he had temptation that he had to overcome as well. And he had to endure all the things that other people did. Not just not responding like he hoped, because he didn't just have people didn't respond as well as he hoped. He had also people responding with anger and vengeance and trying to kill him. And most of us, as he goes on, we haven't struggled yet like he has. But we need to look to him, because he looked to the finish line. And for us, the finish line is when we put off this flesh. We're not done until we leave this body behind. That's when we've given up the work God has given us to go to the reward that he has promised us. So, just remember, I think this point on this slide is one of the ones that I try to remind myself all the time to not get tired of doing, try to do good things for people or anybody, you know, whether in the church or out of the church, neighbors or whoever. And they're never meaningless. They're never empty when you do them. Even if nobody says anything, even if it seems like nobody even understands it, God knows. And remember, if God knows, he's our rewarder. He's the one who will honor us and lift us up. So I appreciate all your time. We're going to switch over and sing one song just to close out this morning. Appreciate everybody, you know, being able to be here today, especially, you know, all the, you know, wearing masks and how difficult that is for us. And I know it's harder and some can't do it. But appreciate everybody, you know, coming in this in these times, and hopefully these momentary afflictions of the flesh will pass sooner than later. I'm sure many of us have been praying that prayer a lot. But regardless of the momentary afflictions, the promises of God never change. And he is urging us to remember them so that we can keep going and never get held back and never stop. And so if you're here today, though, please reach out to us. Let us know. Send us an email. Send us a text. Just grab somebody after we're done. Let us know if you need something, and we can help you in any way. If you just need prayers, if you just need somebody to talk to, if you just, whatever it might be, if you want to study anything, if we can serve you in some ways, please let us know how. Together we stand and sing.